Welcome to the LeanZone.com podcast, where we discuss construction contracts, liens, and bonds. And now, our host, Alex Barthet.
You're going to now have your trial. Dress appropriately. Be concise. The judge is going to hear your trial, and you know you may be number 10 on the docket, so he's heard or she's heard 10 trials already, and they got another 15 after you. So just quick and to the point of what matters most in your case. Leave the emotion out of it. The judge doesn't care. He's a bad person. He stole money from me. Just write down a brass tacks. I provided materials. I sent invoices. I didn't get paid. They owe me the money. I mean, it's a pretty simple case for most of you, right? Material, services, and you haven't been paid. So just like you see in court shows, all of the rules of court do apply. So hearsay, objections, irrelevant material. You are allowed to assert those objections, and they are allowed to assert those objections against you because you are still having a trial. Someone is going to sit up on the stand and raise their right hand and present evidence. And if the manner in which they present evidence is outside the rules, then it shouldn't be allowed. So just know that. We could spend a whole day talking about just objections. If you actually are going to have a trial on your own, you probably should look up what these objections are so that you understand them. But you know, most judges are going to be very lenient about allowing evidence in. And if you let the other side go crazy and you look professional and you're on point, that's going to help you. So usually asserting objections is really not going to be all to your advantage. So you've had your trial. The judge issues a verdict. You win. The other side loses. Now you get what's called a judgment. That's a piece of paper that says the other side owes you money. Now, people perceive that when the other side owes you money, like Delta Force 7 is going to come in and like take stuff out of their house and you know pick up their car. No one's going to do anything for you that you don't do yourself. And if you thought the time and effort you spent getting the judgment was hard, you have seen nothing. Collecting on a judgment when someone doesn't want to pay is a tremendous effort, and that's when the costs are really going to start to go up. Right now, if you've done everything right and you've done it on your own, you've spent $400, $450 maybe. Wait till you now have to start trying to collect on your judgment. So the first thing you want to do is you get this judgment, you're going to take it to the clerk, and you're going to get a certified copy. And then you're going to take that certified copy and you're going to record it in the county where you think the defendant is located, because if the defendant has property, real property in that location, then then your judgment will encumber that real property. But the only way it does that is if you have a certified judgment recorded in the county. Now, don't get confused. The clerk is going to record a copy of the judgment. But that judgment that the clerk records is not the judgment that's going to encumber the property. It's when you actually get another copy, get it certified by the clerk, and then record it again. Seems crazy, but that's what you have to do. You then want to take a copy and go on to the Secretary of State, and you want to docket it with the Secretary of State. So every property is broken down into two main categories: real property, dirt, buildings in dirt, and personal property, cars, boats, TVs, copiers, computers. Recording a certified copy of the judgment in the county where the real property is located encumbers that property if it's owned by the judgment debtor, the entity or person named in the judgment. Encumbering their personal property, their TV, their car, their boat, happens when you take a copy of that judgment and you docket it with the Secretary of State. But the business, understand, this only applies to the judgment debtor, right? So if your judgment debtor is XYZ Corp, right, and you see John Smith, who was the president, driving around his Ferrari, right, there's nothing you can do unless that Ferrari is owned by the company that is the judgment debtor. And I take that back. It's not that you can't do anything. It's that to try to convert the judgment to him individually or to his new business, that takes a lot of work. And I would tell you, if you're owed $5,000, it's easy for me to say here, probably just worth being done and moving on, because you can spend a lot of time and effort trying to keep chasing that money. Your judgment is entitled to accrue interest. Interest currently is about 4.75%. I think maybe it's up to 5% now. If you have a contract that says you're entitled to interest at another rate, up to 18%, you can get that additional interest rate in your judgment. So the judgment is entered. The other side can file papers, including an appeal, to try to undo the judgment. They can move to set it aside. They can argue what's called excusable neglect in case they missed it. Maybe they didn't show up to the trial because they got hit by a car on the way there, so they were in the hospital, right? Most judges are going to undo that judgment if they can prove that that happened. They can also file an appeal. Small claims appeals, pretty rare, but not non-existent. We talked about recording your judgment. Judgments are good for 10 years and can be renewed for another 10 years. And there are ways to renew it even longer, but that's typically the length of time that a judgment will last, which is a long time. So a judgment against a person or company will likely show up on their credit. So let's assume you get a judgment against a company, and then they go to go see Jonathan because they want a bond, and Jonathan's going to run their credit, right, Jonathan?
The surety, right?
So, and when they do, they say, wait a second. You know, what's going on? They've got this $5,000 judgment. And they'll say, well, you know, you need to take care of that. They go refinance a house. They want to get a car loan. They want to get a bank loan, right? That judgment will show up. It takes a little while, but it'll eventually show up. So it's possible, and we have this happen all the time. I mean, we get judgments constantly for our clients. And they go into the public record. Our name is on it. And, you know, I'll get a call every couple of months from so-and-so saying, okay, I need to pay the judgment. What's the amount? You know, maybe it's 6 months old. Maybe it's 8 years old. So there's that possibility that it nags at them so much, even if you don't do anything, that they decide to pay. Not because they're nice people, but because it's preventing them from doing something else that they need to do.
This episode is brought to you by the Construction Lawyers Alliance, a network of the top construction lawyers from around the country. At ConstructionLawyersAlliance.com, you can search construction law topics in nearly every state. Visit ConstructionLawyersAlliance.com to find the construction law answers you are looking for and a seasoned construction lawyer that can assist you.
The judgment that you get in your small claims case that you get a certified copy and record, it will encumber that judgment debtor's real property everywhere in the county, right? So let's say you delivered materials to a job site and you missed your claim of lien deadline. Oops, you decide to file a lawsuit, you win, you get your judgment. Once you get the judgment and record a certified copy, that certified copy becomes a lien on all of their real property. So now fast forward 6 months and they want to sell the property, they want to refinance. That judgment, not the lien, that judgment, which becomes a lien on their property, now is going to show up and they're going to have to take care of it. And that judgment lien is going to last for 10 years. Yet, typically what we do is the very first thing we do when we get a judgment for a client is we run through a service that we use and some other public records that we're able to obtain. We run an asset search that sometimes reveals some banking information. As well, keep in mind, maybe they paid you five times but didn't pay you the sixth time. Well, what should you do? Go back in your file. Oh, look, here's a copy of the check. They bank at, you know, Wells Fargo. Let's garnish that account. Maybe there's money there, right? So you may have a lot more information than you think you do. You can bring the defendant in for a deposition. You can ask them questions. Tell me, limited to the judgment debtor. Tell me about your business. Tell me about your accounts receivable. Who owes you money? Because not only can you garnish a bank, you can garnish anyone or any entity that owes them money. So in construction, we do this all the time. So we will represent a supplier. That supplier gets a judgment against a subcontractor. The subcontractor doesn't pay the judgment. What do? We try to figure out who they're doing work with. We'll go out and we'll pull permits, the permit history, especially if they're a licensed contractor, subcontractor. You know, we can figure out, okay, look, there's six jobs they're doing. Here are the GCs for the job. Let's submit a garnishment to those GCs so that when it comes time for them to pay the subcontractor, they'll have to pay me instead of the subcontractor.
They have to do that.
They have to do that if you garnish them. So there are ways to garnish wages as well of people, but then they have certain exemptions to those garnishment of wages based on head of household. You can request what's called a fact information sheet as part of your judgment, a copy of which is attached. It has lots of information. Every judgment we get, we always ask that the defendant provide the fact information sheet. I will tell you, in doing this now for almost 20 years, not one single defendant has ever voluntarily given us the fact information sheet. So know that you can request it, but again, if someone doesn't want to pay you, they're not going to make your life easy in writing you a check, so you have to make sure that you're on top of them. Again, I would tell you that the garnishment is typically the fastest, cheapest, best way to get money. The hard part is figuring out who to garnish, where they bank, who they do business with, so that you can kind of intercept that money. There are other ways to get paid. You can get stuff that they have, right? So if the judgment debtor has things, you can get them. But I would tell you that that's tremendously expensive, and it may not be the payoff that you think. So let's assume that you have a judgment against a company. That company has trucks. Maybe those trucks are pledged to a line of credit. So now you're in second place. So you could go spend the money to pick up the truck, which is expensive, by the way, many thousands of dollars to do this. You pick it up, you have an auction, and guess what? All that money goes to the prior judgment holder or prior lien holder on the asset that you've now sold. So what you want to do is you want to try to find assets that are completely unencumbered, a car or truck that's doesn't have any loans or liens on it. Not so easy to do. Most people that are sophisticated that don't want to pay you, they know all of these tricks. They lease their cars. They lease their equipment. They go to check cashing stores so they don't have a bank account. They show up to the deposition in aid of execution and they don't have any jewelry on, but they have remarkable tan lines where their Rolex was, right? So we've seen it all. I will tell you one story and then I'll wrap up, answer any questions. We had a judgment against a company and a guarantor, and they just would not pay. She would not pay this bill. We had her in, we tried to garnish some accounts. She was overdrawn. She didn't own anything. So we get her in for a deposition, and it is a thorough examination of this person's life. And we learn that she has two purebred dogs that she is in love with. Well, dogs are not people. Dogs are personal property. And guess what? We have a judgment on all her personal property. So we start asking questions about, well, how much were the dogs? What's the current fair market value of the dogs that you have? And she was not happy. And we settled the case on the spot. She came, surprisingly, wow, she has the money. So, yeah, she found it, right? So, exactly. So the key is that you got to push the right buttons, but again, understand that there is a cost associated with it, and there's a time factor associated with it in your business. And for you to spend mental effort to chase this money means that you are taking your time and effort away from furthering your business. So you should always make a conscious business decision on whether or not it is a good use of your time and effort to pursue this debt. And that's why I will revert back to where I started. If you can settle the case at the beginning for a fair discount, even a painful discount, I would urge you to do it and just be done. Add them to your list of people that you'll never do business with again. Take a hit and move on to the next job, because it's not worth, many times it's not worth the time and effort. Now, again, the other side may not give you a lot of options. They may be unwilling to settle. The debt may be very large and, you know, they're not willing to pay you. So there may be reasons you can't settle, but if at all possible that you can make a you can resolve the case, you should do it.
Thanks for listening to the LeanZone.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or in your favorite podcast app. For articles, videos, and forms on this and other construction topics, head over to the LeanZone.com.